Turn on the
welcome to another Carpcast Extra, where we guide you through the different skills to make you into a complete angler. And this one, this week's edition, is on watercraft, which is such a big subject. When we were doing research for this, you know, something that we kind of take for granted a lot of the time, once we started listing all the things to talk about, it encompasses so much. So if you had to define what is watercraft, Mark, what would your answer be?
Can I Google it? It's just I'm trying to think of a way to put it into words. It's basically the understanding of the lake, you know, what you're supposed to do, the understanding of the fish, understanding how to react to get the best results out of it, you know, right down from your location to, you know, the conditions, the weather, you know, what you can learn off, you know, other things, the wildlife, the birds. They can be a pain, but they can give so much away at times.
Yes.
You know, what you see when you look in the water.
When you meet somebody that has good watercraft, I mean, if I say to you, who would you say is you know, the sharpest guy you've ever met when it comes to watercraft? Like, who springs to mind?
Oh, probably a fella no one's heard of, but a fella from York called Sean Ong. He was a natural.
Yep,
and he was just that good.
And I would probably go with somebody like Roger Bacon, Carpcast, friend of the show and listener, because for a number of reasons, I'll tell you another one, Daryl Peck. Whenever I've sat with Daryl on a lake, he knows what's going on constantly. And another one that comes to mind is John Mack. Again, he knows what's going on any given day. And it's by taking in what is the information in front of him. Your eyes are picking up information, maybe your ears, you're hearing fish show to the right at night and they're showing to the left in the mornings. Maybe you see them on the jumping on the near side of the island at a certain time of day, and other days you don't see them, they sit, but somebody else sees them on the back of the island because in different conditions they change their patrol routes. But basically, I think it's the summary of information that's out there. Now, I used to think that you couldn't teach watercraft, that some people are natural at it, but I think if you know the things to look out for, I believe you can teach watercraft, because sometimes it's just knowing what to look for, what to be aware of. Now, the most obvious bit of it is showing fish. If you see a fish jump out, it's told you a hell of a lot. From the time of day, from the location, to how it shows. Like, there's a big difference in seeing a fish nut out. You know, can you picture that fish that nuts out? It's like slides up to kind of halfway up its belly, and then on the same spot that it poked its head out, it falls over and literally collapses on the spot. Then you've got the type of show where the fish is like at 45 degrees, where it comes out of the water and then it lands 3 or 4 foot in front of where it was. I think they're moving fish. And quite often on high pressure days, you see the fish sort of launch clear of the water and almost tail walk. I don't think they're feeding fish either. I think they're either cleaning their gills.
A dead giveaway is, you know, if the water's flat enough, look for the bubbles as the fish is shown. And if it goes in a straight line, it's obviously it's travelling, it's on its way. But a lot of times when they've just breached the surface to, you know, clean the gills because they're feeding, you'll see the bubbles, it'll just be a large circle or a large arc as it makes its way back down to the spot. And then instead of casting, if you can, if it's close enough, casting directly where the fish showed, look where the bubbles go. You know, it might be, you know, going a big semicircle, and you know, the spot where it's feeding might be, you know, 5-10 yards away from where it showed, but just,
yeah,
so don't say bubbles.
Even something as simple as a fish nutting out can give you a lot of information. You know, I've got the other type where they just poke their heads out, like just up to the gill cover and back in. I always think they're feeding fish as well, you know. So if you see that anywhere on a lake, then you probably want to be fishing in that area. But there are so many other signs of how to spot a carp. You know, you can have reeds on a lake and you can see the reeds twitching, so you know, you keep an eye on it, because if the reeds are twitching at the front, and they will rock and they'll leave little rings around the reeds as it goes in, that's something for look for. You've already mentioned bubbling after showing fish. You can see bubbling as a sign of a feeding fish without the fish actually breaking the surface, and the difference between the sort of like silt bubbles, where it's just gases coming out of the water, they tend to just come up on the same spots continually, where a fish feeding tends to come up in a line as the fish is grubbing the bottom and looking around, and they're definitely in lines, and you can see the different sizes of bubbles as well. Clouded water. You know, we fish lakes, especially clay pits and stuff, Mark, where you can just walk into an area and it's just yellow, like just a massive cloud of yellow in the water. You've bumped into that a few times, haven't you, on lakes like Elstow with the clay pits?
Oh, I've got some, they'll be on slide, but I've got some old pictures of where they've turned the margins to milk, where I've, you know, got them really, really going on the bait. I only caught one fish off of that spot, but it was the one I wanted. So yeah, it's really, really worth it. But, you know, where else do we go? You know, even after a fish is fed on the spot, you know, the damage they do to the bottom, in weed, in silt, they do leave definite, well, front of a better word, tracks.
Yeah, tracks, footprints. You can see tracks through Canadian weed as well, where fish burrow through them and use patrol routes. Something else, yeah, to look for: water birds. They can, yes, spook. There are some lakes where the ducks do not get along with the fish, and I'm sure you can picture that squawking sound. You know, if a fish ever jumps at night and it makes a big splash and it happens to land quite close to a coot or a moorhen, the birds shit themselves, quite literally, and there's a squawking sound that they make. Whenever I hear that sound, I know a carp's just jumped near it, which again is location, which is all part of watercraft. This is watercraft covers so many things. I think if you know the things to look for, you're naturally going to become more observant on the water and then use that information to help you find fish. You start off in obvious places: features, islands, margins, snags, or if you're fishing sort of gravel pits and stuff, you know, find the bars, aerial photos. Google Earth can help you with the location. Yeah. Modern technology, we've got things like the Deeper Pro, where you can just cast it over the swim and see the gullies, see the bars. But just knowing where those features are, when you see, you know, if you're fishing an area of the lake and you notice three bars and they're spaced 15 yards apart, you see a fish show and you know that there's feature there, you can go, oh, it's on the middle bar, that fish is on the near side of the middle bar, that fish is on the back of the middle bar. And just by doing your homework on the bottom can help you so much with the information when you do notice something. Or like I say, maybe it's the middle of the night and you've heard, seen a disturbance or heard the bird squawking where fish has clearly disturbed it, and you know roughly where it is, it's on the first bar, then I'd want to be moving my rods into that sort of general area, because we can't always see what's going on the bottom, but by a process of elimination we can work it out. So you need to learn where all the features are, from gravel bars, silt gullies, snags, open water, You know, quite often, if you just see, it used to happen on Elstow too a lot, Mark, where you just see fish launching clear of the water in no man's land, right out in the middle, and you know those fish are not feeding, they're just completely no man's land, purely because they're, you know, it's maybe high pressure, or you know, they're almost playing, literally tail walking, just knowing the depths of each part of the lake. I mean, I used to like starting on a lake in the winter, so if I knew I was going to fish a syndicate for the whole year, or it was a day ticket lake that I was going to concentrate on regularly, I try and get in there when there's no anglers. And what I would do at the start of a session, or the start of the year, is I'm going fishing to learn the lake as opposed to catch fish, so that I've got a mental picture of the whole lake. Now, obviously, some lakes, some day ticket lakes as well, and you can buy or look online and you can get the topography of the lake. You know, a lot of lakes have had the, you know, the scan echo sounder scanning, and you've seen the multicolored maps, haven't you, Mark, where you can completely read a lake. Obviously, that's a head start. If you haven't got that, then I would try and fish as many swims as I would could in as quick a space of time as possible. So I would split the lake into areas. Maybe there's 8 sections of the lake, you know, usually on the ends of all the different winds: easterlies, northeasterly, southeasterly, westerly, southwesterly, straight southerly, and look for one or two swims that I think will be the most productive swims in each part of the lake, and then try and fish them all and get a lead cast out in there, have a feel around, or a deeper pro in the sort of modern age, and map each swim. You can fine tune it later on during the year, but you want to make sure that you've got the ability to be able to jump into any area of the lake and roughly know what's out in front of you, in case you get the opportunity, you see fish and you move on them, and you don't want to ruin the situation. So just by training yourself for things to be aware of, so we learn the features of what's going on underneath, it's going to really help you catch fish quickly when you're approaching a new lake. So if you're just arriving at a lake, let's say you've done this work, you've fished, you know, 10 swims in sort of a short space of time in the winter before the weeds up, you've had a chance to get the leads around, you've got the rough depths in each areas, you've not seen a carp yet, the weather's just warming up a little bit, we're just coming into the spring now, you turn up at the lake, Mark, you load your barrow in the car park, what are you looking for?
I think the first 3 things I'd be looking for is wind, weed and snags.
Yep.
So your wind is your weather forecast. You're going to know which direction the wind's blowing. You Google Earth, you're going to know which is the northerly. You're going to know where the southwesterly is going to be blowing, the warm wind that we all rave about. Weed, carp love weed. They're never going to be far from it, unless the lake is choked with weed, and then it's just everywhere. But if you're on a lake that's not got a lot of weed, I'll always just look for it. Exactly the same with snags. Carp love snags. I mean, they're not the easiest things to fish up to, but you have to be sensible. But carp love snags. If there's only one set of snags on a lake, it's going to hold carp. If the lake's very snaggy, then they'll be more spread out. But that's what I look for first. I am going to walk around. I'm going to look for the obvious, what we've spoke about. If there's any bird life giving things away, showing fish is the obvious one, the bubblers. But if there's no showing fish or anything like that, then wind, weed, or weed snags are the first 3 I look for anywhere I'm going.
Yeah, fish like cover, so they use features to move around a lake, such as bars and stuff. And weed is a very good holding area because they feel safer around it. Can be a little bit warmer at cooler times of year, they're happy sitting in weed for the majority of the day. So, yeah. I always want to be fishing, unless I see fish like right out in open water, I always want to be fishing near some sort of feature, whether that feature is something on the bottom or if it's weed. And then you can do the other thing, which is create an area yourself. You can create a natural food source by regularly feeding an area. which is another tactic that I use. So I don't like setting up on a lake, assuming there are swims free. If you don't have any prior information, such as where the last fish came from, I mean, I've heard it joked about on a number of lakes that the most important piece of watercraft is knowing where the last fish came from. And if you turn up to the lake and you can get in the swim where the last carp was caught from, you probably don't need to know too much else. About a lake, because fish are creatures of habit, but I'd rather be the person that's finding the carp, you know, that's doing it off his own back, and I'm the guy that's found the fish in a new area where maybe it's been getting left alone for a little while, and you have the hit of fish and then you can't ever get back in that swim again because everyone else is getting in the spot that did the last fish. But I want to see fish before settle. When I arrive at a lake, I've done my homework as far as the bottom. I know where the snags are, you know, I've picked a couple of swims on each wind. Then I want to see something, because you've still got a reasonable sized lake. You know, they could be in any corner. They could be on the back of the wind. They could be on the end of the wind. I mean, my first choice is to get on the end of a new wind. I mean, it's still to this day one of the most successful areas on any lake, is if you can get a wind change. This is all watercraft as far as I'm concerned. Just understanding, you know, the amount of times I've sat there for weeks waiting to go fishing and I'm waiting for the wind change to coincide with, you know, whatever day that I can fish. If I fish weekends, I'm looking for a wind change on a Friday morning or on a Saturday morning where I can get in the swim on the Friday afternoon ahead of the weather, get my trap sorted, get the bait out, knowing that there's going to be a new wind blowing in tomorrow. And the amount of times I've got excited about it and then, you know, the weather changes and it hasn't come on the day you've set up, and it doesn't come the day after, and then you're going home and it comes the day after that, and you know, it's frustrating at times. But just having a decent weather app on your phone, I use Weather Pro, which you have to pay for it, but it's quite cheap, I think. It seems to be very accurate, but just having a decent 7-day forecast in front of you is really going to help you find the fish when you get there. So we're on the lake, we've done our homework, Mark, we've picked a swim because maybe we've seen a couple of fish, or we've had some information that, you know, the fish have been in a particular part of the lake. You've got your rods out, you found some spots, you've got them out. Then what next? Do we just put the kettle on and forget about it?
Putting the kettle on, definitely. But no, you don't forget about it. You know, you've still got to watch out there, because, and just let me give you a quick example. I have Mrs. Elfstow too. I've moved, done a few showing fish into the swim called the Magic Carpet. The wind's blowing into that corner of the lake. You know, I've got the rods out along the features that's out in the front of that swim. And I've put the kettle on and that's it. A fella's turned up, gone for a walk round, and he's gone in the back bay, right on the back of the wind, right opposite me. And, you know, I'm having a chat with someone else, and I'm ridiculing him, saying, what the hell is he doing over there? Ah, he had the twin next morning at 43 pounds. That's what he was doing. So he could have, you know, gone on the flat bank near me where there was still one or two fish showing. But he's walked round, he's seen, whatever he's seen in the back bay, and he's been just rewarded. So, you know, everything we've said here, what we'll say is there is always exceptions to the rule, especially where the wind is concerned. So keep an open mind and open eyes.
One of the best bits of advice somebody gave me when I first started fishing serious lakes, where, you know, it was anglers against the fish and we were all fishing for a small amount of fish, was walk around the lake once a day. Reel in, even if you're happy with your spots and you think you might be on fish, walk round. First of all, just speaking to people on the back. You know, you might think that you're quite happy in the area you're in, until you walk on the back of the wind, or go and chat to a guy, have a cup of tea with him who's right around the other side, and he's you might have seen a couple of fish show, you've seen one or two on dark, you heard one jump in the night, you woke up, you've seen one this morning, so, and you're happy with your spots, so you're pretty confident that you're on fish and jobs are good. And picture the scene, you reel in at midday, you have a wander around the other lake, go and see Joe Bloggs on the other side. He's like, oh, you wouldn't believe they've been showing every 5 minutes since I woke up. First time I opened my eyes this morning, they're two at a time, the head and shouldering. How do you feel about your swim now? You know, would you rather, you were happy with your swim 5 minutes ago, and now you're not. Now, you don't know that if you sit in that swim. And I remember reading a Dave Lane article many years ago, where I think he was fishing Cleveley Mere in Essex, and he has this belief that fish are feeding in any lake at every part of the day. Now, sometimes they're not feeding hard enough to get caught, but at some point, well, no, not at some point, at all points during the day, there is a carp feeding somewhere in that lake, and it's your job to find out where. So maybe in your swim, you've been picking up a bite on first light every morning, and so you do two or three nights in that area because you know it's worth a bite. Well, how do you know that you're not getting two bites at 3 o'clock in the afternoon in a different swim, or you know, at 11 o'clock in the morning in another swim, you always pick one up, but you also pick one up at 11 o'clock at night as well, because you're not on the only fish. It's very easy to kind of stick to the safe option if you know that you've been picking one fish a day up. That exact scenario happened to me on Wyre side, on the Wyre Lake, about 15 years ago. It's in the springtime, and in the spring the lake gets very weedy, full of Canadian. There's an island at quite a long chalk, like 130 yards chalk from most banks. There's one spot where it's an 80 yard chalk, but generally it's quite long, so it's hard work to fish the island, especially to get bait out there. But in the spring, the first 20-30 bites in sort of March, April always come off the island because the weed's not up and there's no cover in the lake. The fish use the safest feature in the lakefront, which is the island, which in some parts of the lake it's out of range for 99% of casters. And they feel safe out there. So I decided I was going to do a little campaign. I wanted to get some bait in the spring and fish an area. So I fished one of the longer chuck areas because I knew that less, I could probably get in the swim more regular because it was, I think it was like 136 or 138 yards to the island. And there was a spot off there, it's a pretty obvious spot off the side of a willow tree. And I knew that, you know, there's only a few of the anglers could reach it. I could only just reach it, an absolute stretch, you know, and the wind was calm or favourable. And, you know, it was quite a struggle to do it if there was any sort of wind for me back then, using the old 2 3/4 pound amorphous, diaramorphous rods. Anyway,
classics.
It was worth one bite every morning, every single morning. So I'd normally do two or three nights in a week, midweek. But being on such a long line to an island, fishing up the side of a tree, I was losing 50% of the bites because the fish had kited. It was already under the tree after your first couple of beeps. You know, it's on 130 yards of line, and it was 50-50 whether you got the fish back in. So I was getting one bite in the morning, usually at first light, 6 or 7 o'clock, and it was 50-50 if I landed it. And I was like, this isn't good enough. Like that's not a good enough action rate for me. And I was getting no bites all day until, you know, 7 o'clock the next morning. I was almost guaranteed another bite. And I ended up looking for another area. Anyway, the sun was out one day and I ended up catching like a glimpse through the binoculars. I was just scanning the lake with my binoculars, which we'll go on to, like equipment, but it's an essential item. Of equipment to have some binoculars on the lane. So many anglers don't take them. I use these Opticron ones, which are extremely good quality ones, got them from a Christmas 1 year, 10 years ago, couple hundred pounds worth, and the difference between the 20 quid sets you get in the local garage and a proper set is incredible, you know. And then you go up into the thousands of pounds ones that the bird watchers use, but it opens it up. Anyway, I was scanning, me and my pal Dave, we were looking for fish, and I ended up seeing some backs glistening in like an area of the lake that we would have never thought to see the fish. It was a slightly shallower area, which the fish normally weren't in March, because it was, you know, we presumed it was too cold. There was no weed out there, no cover or anything, but they're obviously there for the depths. When the sun was out, it must have been an area of the lake that that was comfortable for them in the daytime. Now, even if you did catch the odd fish in the morning in that swim, they would never stay there at night. Anyway, I could see a group of fish just glistening, their backs must have been just breaking the surface in the sun. Ended up moving and doing a baiting campaign for the next 5 days in that swim, all based off just that chance sighting in the sun with the binoculars. Anyway, I ended up catching 16 fish and losing 6, which is at the time on wire, that's a season, that was a season's worth of fish, looking at 80 to 100 carp in the lake. You know, it's fairly well fished, and 15 to 20 fish was a good season. I had 16 in 4 nights fishing. After baiting up for 4 days, and I was catching at night as well. I was catching all day and all night because I gave a reason for the fish to stay there, whereas they would normally, you know, as it starts going cool, they would shoot off back to the island or wherever they go. It was a nice 70-80 yard spotting range, and I went down there 3 days in a row with a full bucket of hemp and particle and filled it in. There were people on the other side of, I was the only person putting, everyone else was fishing the island swims at long range, so they weren't putting any hemp out there because you couldn't get it out there. And there were people getting the odd bite off the other side of the island that was crapping out my hemp. So I reckon at some point I had almost every carp in the lake in that area. And it all came from watercraft, from a chance sighting with binoculars. Another essential piece of equipment is polarized glasses. You always have a set with them, Mark?
Oh, 100%. I own a couple of sets. One old set that just stays in the bottom of a bag in a case in case I lose or squash my current set. But I've actually treated myself a couple of years back, got some Costa del Mar ones, and they're great for driving, but oh, they are so, so good for, you know, seeing through the water. I mean, I still, do you know a fella called Matt Eaton?
I've heard the name,
Yeah, he's had a rake of big fish to over 50 pounds. And we were at the Carp in the Park show. You know, we took the Costa guys, and you know, we gave the selection of his glasses. I had you know, some Fortis ones, which, you know, are good glasses in that price range. And we just had to walk down to the one of the lakes to compare. And well, the lake was full of algae, so we're just looking in this, you know, stream. It was a couple of foot deep, gin clear. And you know, with the Fortis glasses, you know, you could see plenty. You know, they were good. You put the, you know, Costa del Mar on, it was like you were looking at no water.
Really?
Yeah, admittedly, they're in a completely different price bracket. They're not cheap, but, you know, they are well, well worth, you know, just basically get the best set of Polaroids you can afford, and they will catch you extra fish. And it's not just for spotting the fish, as we've said, it's looking at everything else that's down there.
Yeah, you can see so much. A good set of Polaroids, you can see 12 to 20 foot down in the water in really clear. And, you know, one of the best observational anglers I've ever met that we spoke about before was Roger Bacon. And he has probably 10 sets of the cheap 10 to 20 pound Polaroids, you know, the plastic ones you get in the fishing shop. So few companies do them, which is certainly way better than no glasses. Well, they're 1000% better than having no polarized glasses. So obviously the purpose of them is to take the glare off the water, and he has them in literally every coat that he's got, in, you know, in the sides of his fishing motor, in the side of his normal motor. So even if he's out, I've never been with him, and you know, maybe we just took the kids to the park, and there's a pond in the park. It's just standard practice to him to be walking, looking around the margin, go, oh, can you see that down there? There's a shopping trolley down there, or there's a fish swimming about, or look at that big pike there. And I've never got Polaroids with me, and I used to have one set in my fishing gear, and that was it. And he trained me to always keep Polaroids with me, because and as I said, they don't need to be expensive ones. You can have a really nice set that you take with you on, you know, on when you actually go fishing, but it's worth having a couple of sets of the cheap ones, not just knocking about, like say in your missus's car, in your car, in your, you know, your short session fishing bag and your proper fishing bag, maybe just being able to see what's going on in the water. And I take the dog for a walk around our local park lake in Blackpool, Stanley Park, and I see fish every single time I walk around, even in the winter now, because I've always got my glasses on. And I've got a really good set as well. I bought a nice set of sunglasses last summer or the summer before, and because I was spending a bit of money on some Oakleys, they said, do you want the lenses polarized? Because I had them done prescription as well, and it cost an absolute fortune. I don't think the polarizing itself was that expensive. It was 20 or 30 quid more than, you know, whatever I was paying for these lenses anyway. But these glasses are incredible. I was with my dad in one of the London Queen Victoria Park, on the London Parks last summer actually, and my dad said, oh, they'll feed the ducks down here, and we'd gone to get a coffee in this one end. I put these sunglasses on, I had with me anyway because it was a sunny day. The second I put them on, there was about 150 carp up to £30 just everywhere in front of me, just under the surface, that I couldn't see without them. They were just there. And again, it's watercraft, just understanding what's going on. You're going to see a little bit more, you know, by using something as simple as polarized glasses. And it's surprising how many anglers, again, don't carry them, and again, don't carry them when they need them. You know, you want to set on your every time, anytime you're walking anywhere outside. You don't know when you're going to stumble across a bit of water or what there is to see below the surface. And there is other
go on. Yeah, I'm going to say, just imagine this scenario: you're out walking with a wife around the local park lake. You know, you've grabbed your Polaroid glasses. And then, you know, you suddenly have that situation like you've just described, but back in the boot of the car, you've got your little sawed-off scope rod. You're on back, you've got a cap.
Yeah, you know, Alan Blair, again, is the master at that. He walks round, sees fish and fishes for what's right in front of him, a little bread bomb or, you know, something free-lined, a bunch of a dozen maggots on a small hook free-lined out in front of him. Just seeing the fish there, and going back to what we were saying about walking around the lake every day, get your Polaroids on, reel in at least once a day and do a lap. You can see what you see, you know, around the edges, and while you walk round, you might just walk into a swim and a fish boshes out right in front of you, or you might go and see your mate on the far side of the lake and he's all excited, sitting on his hands, eyes peeled at the water, because they're not in every 60 seconds. And it's so easy to get complacent, but until you do that, and maybe the opposite happens. Maybe you walk around the lake and the whole lake's dead and you're completely happy where you are. But just having that picture at least once a day of what's going on all around the lake. And one of the biggest tips of watercraft is do your own looking, because how many times has somebody bum steered you on a lake?
Yeah, you have a few times.
It's standard. Nobody ever tells you. If somebody's thinking of moving to an area, like they're sat, maybe they're quite happy with their swim, but they keep seeing a fish jump three swims up, and they're like 50-50 whether to move or not, they are not going to tell you about that when you walk around that lake. And say, even if it's your mate, they are not going to tell you until they've made their mind up whether they want to move there or not. Or sometimes you've walked around, you're like, oh, I'm thinking of a move, you sin out, they're going to tell you something completely different because they don't want you. They're like, oh shit, I was thinking about going there. If he stands here any longer, he's going to see a fish there. Oh yeah, yeah, I've seen a couple. So-and-so said he's seen a couple down in the bay down there. I'd go and check that out if I was you. Be very wary of somebody that says that to you.
Yeah. How many times have you been stood with someone bankside chatting, and then you kind of manoeuvre yourself so you're in their line of vision, you stand between them and the lake so they can't actually see what's going off out there?
Yeah, and I've done it where I've seen fish over someone's shoulder. So I'm stood in their swim, I'm wandering around for a chat, and it's like, have you seen anything, mate? And, you know, they're stood looking at you, not looking at the water. And they're like, no, it's pretty dead. And then the fish boshes over their right shoulder. And you're like, right, two things here. One, he's lying to me. Or two, he just hasn't seen them. And how many times have you been with somebody and they just not seen the fish show in front of them? Because they're not looking.
Do you remember the rabbit watcher?
Yes, I do. Bivvied up facing the field and not the lake, with fish nutting one after the other in front of him on a low stock lake where they didn't have many fish.
Yeah, That's what I want. You know, always face the water. That's another simple bit of watercraft. Even if the wind's blowing straight in, just set up so you can just lay on the bed chair and just look, just see out there.
I always try and make sure I can see most of my swim from the lay down position. Again, being lazy, you know. One of the key bits of advice with watercraft is most fish get into habits at different times of year. I would say the most important time to be watching the water is as it goes dark and as it's getting light. So you want to be up, you know, you want to get your alarm set just before it gets light, get the kettle on, because you can surprise what you miss. You're fishing a low stock lake, it's got 20-30 carp in it, you're looking for one show quite often to give away the fish's location, because it's probably 3-4 maybe a third of the stock of the lake with that one fish that you happen to see show. You can be looking all morning, but if you're constantly looking down, rolling carp fags, making brew after brew, you're not watching the lake. And you know, Roger Bacon, I call him Hawkeye, because he sees things that I don't see. Jim Shelley used to be like that as well. I've stood on fen drayton with Jim Shelley and he's seen 50 shows to my one, and he's like, that one over there, have you just seen that? And I've missed it. And then he's, and another, there's one there, and I'm looking, I've missed it. And then 1 in 10 I might see that he said, oh, because I happen to be looking directly at the spot. And it's almost like you tune your eyes into it. And some people are naturally good, but you can definitely train yourself. And what you have to do is to not be distracted. So if you're the sort of person, you're bored after 10 minutes, you're staring at the water, you know, it's like, oh, I'll make another cup of tea. And then you're looking down at the floor, you're getting your milk, you're getting your tea bags, you're watching the stove, and you happen to look up for the water, you know, every few minutes. If that fish is showing on the times you're looking down, they could be showing in front of you all morning and you not see it. And I've been on the other side of a lake looking in someone's swim, and I've seen 20 shows in their swim just because it's in my line of sight or whatever, and I've wandered around to see them. And any good mate, it's like, no, it's been dead, I've not seen anything all morning. And straight away you're going, are they lying or have they just not seen them? But either way, you have. So, you know, you've straight away got more information than them. And the people that I named earlier, the Roger Bacons, the Jim Shelleys, the John Max, the Darrells, they know what's going on. They don't miss fish. Like, you know, maybe they miss 1 in 10 instead of see 1 in 10. But I've done it again on the Elstow 2. I was sat there on the headland one morning. And I got up at first light. It's always a struggle for me to get up. I am naturally lazy and I'm not a morning person, so it's an effort for me to get up half an hour before first light, make a brew while it's still dark, and then sit there. Maybe it's freezing cold or it's drizzly or whatever, and sit there scanning my swim all morning. It can be a proper effort. Anyway, I remember doing it one morning. I was on the headland, and Roger had come down that morning. I thought I'd looked properly, constantly into the water. Anyway, Roger walked into my swim, he's like, have you seen any? I was like, no. And he goes, there's one. The fish showed 40 yards out in front of me. Now, I was like, oh, they've not shown all morning. And he's like, you telling me at 10 a.m. I've just walked into your swim and seen one within 10 seconds of being in your swim, you're telling me that's the first fish that's shown here all morning? And then he saw probably three within the 40 minutes he was sat with me. Saw probably three. Now, as much as I would like to believe that I'd looked hard all morning, I can't have done. There's no, the law of averages disagrees with the fact that the first time a fish showed in my swim was when he walked into the water. No, the common denominator is his eyes are much more tuned in to seeing that fish than mine are. You know, there's looking and there's looking properly. I'll tell you who else was a good watcher. It wasn't Neil White, but I mean, a little skill is get to know who the good watchers are, the people that don't actually miss fish, and then make sure you use them for your info and then give them a little bit
back. If they're stood on the end of the swim, you know, proper hawk-eyeing it up, they're actually seeing things.
That's the other thing, is you see certain anglers in all conditions, you know. Carp fishing is quite comfortable these days. We've got comfy bivvies, you know, we can do a letterbox on the door if the weather's not quite nice or the wind's a bit cold, and we can sit there on the bed chair with the radio on or with you know, the stove on, keeping warm in there. And then you see somebody else that's all wrapped up warm and they're in a winter suit, they're sat on a bucket on the front of the swim, not in the comfort, and they're watching and listening, and they're sat there all day. You know, you must have seen anglers do that. I mean, we go fishing for different reasons. I'm talking about hardcore fishing now, being the best angler on the lake, but that's what you've got to do. There's lots of other guys doing it. And how often have you woke up in the morning thinking, right, my swim's pretty dead, I fancy a move today, and the two good anglers on the lake have already been up, obviously seen something, and moved swim, and you're sat there now with nowhere to really move to because, you know, somebody beat you to it. And I always remember Daryl Peck saying to me when he was fishing Conningbrook, and John Mack was on there at the same time, he said, whatever I think is going on, maybe I work something out or work out the patrol routes or spot that the fish keep turning up there and showing in that swim at a certain time of day, he said, when I think I've just sussed it out and worked it out, there's John Mack pushing his barra to that exact spot. Like, whenever I've done it, he's just beat me to it. And that's the thing, is carp do different things at different times of day, and it's not just observing it, it's working the pattern out that, you know, they're using the near side of the island to get from one end of the lake to the other at certain times of the year. But in the spring they use the back of the island, but in the autumn they use the front of the island. It's A, being observant, and B, piecing the information together in a big jigsaw puzzle to work the lake out, with a combination of understanding where the weed is, where the features are, where the snags are, where the deep areas are, where the shallow areas are. And that, for me, is a summary of watercraft.
Yeah, there's another couple of things I'll add. You mentioned, you know, where the weed is. There's also down to the type of weed is, because the one I'll give away, early spring, your eelgrass, your grassy weed, your green eels, different people call it different stuff, but you'll know what I mean. You know, that comes up pretty much, you know, it's usually about, you know, a month or 6 weeks ahead of the Canadian in a lot of lakes. Just the carp absolutely love it. You know, it's easy to get fish out of as well, unless it gets really, really thick. Just smash a solid bag or anything into the middle of it. You know, I've caught a lot of fish doing that, or even fishing right up to the side of it if you don't want to bag it up. And the other one, if you've not mentioned so far, is your ears, night. Yeah, if you know, you get up when you get to our age, you definitely do. You get up in the middle of the night to relieve yourself, and you go straight back to bed. But no, just make yourself a hot chocolate and just sit up for half an hour, an hour. You know, you might not be able to see much, you know, on some lakes, unless they've got a bit of light pollution around. But you hear that flop, flop, whoosh, over the other side of the lake. You walk a couple of swims down, you can see the rings coming on, you can triangulate to where that fish was, and you think, that's interesting, that's an empty swim. And I have several times moved on the basis of that sort of thing, you know, when on your low stock lakes. But all you have to do is get in that swim and just single pop-ups or stringers out into the rough sort of area. If you already know the swim, then you know the spots. It's you know, nowadays, get your wrap sticks out and wrap it up and single out there and get your kit. But you're on the fish, you know. Yeah. Your ears at night,
not having your radio or phone or podcast on after dark is invaluable. You hear so much more. I was fishing the sneaky nights on the famous Deer Park Lake with the 50-pound commons in. It was doing, because I was fishing at night and we had no electronic devices, no phones or anything, because we weren't really supposed to be there. It was hearing, I kept hearing fish about 200 yards to my right, which if I was in a bivvy with a radio on, as I normally would be on if I was session angling, I would not have heard those fish. I heard it two nights in a row. I went and baited up a couple of hundred yards to the right and then fished it the following day and had the 56 pounder the first night. And that was all from hearing them at night. Whereas normally, if I was on a conventional lake, I'd have been sat in there with a podcast going, maybe a film on Netflix or whatever, and I would not have heard that. And another example of that, remember Martin Pick on Elstow 1, it was many years ago. He was in an area of the lake, Pump Corner, I believe it was called. I was way on the other side of the lake, the stick, or it was, I think, or somewhere. Yeah. And he had a fish after dark, He rang me up to go around and photograph it for him. I walked round there, and the second I got into his swim, badoosh. I was like, how long they've been doing this? He went, they just started after dark, like a big group of fish have just moved in. He said, I started hearing them showing, and he got a bite pretty quickly. I think he ended up having 6 or 7 fish that night, just with the fish moving in after dark. Now, I could not hear those fish from my swim. I did move into the swim next door the following morning, but I think he was probably a bit gutted, but he had to get somebody to come and take the pictures of these fish. But finding yourself an area where you can go and stand out and listen for half an hour, you can hear a decent area of the lake in the middle of the night, because going back to what Dave Lane said, there's always something going on somewhere. And yes, if it's not going on in front of you, it's going on in front of somebody else, or in front of a different area. And don't condone leaving your rods, obviously, but a really good time to do a lap of the lake is midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. It's a good time because everything's silent. You can literally just do a quick lap of the lake and listen as you're walking round. And if you are fancying a move, you know, it's a trick that I used to do a lot of the time. If I'm fancying a move in the morning, if I've got the impression that my area is pretty dead, give yourself an advantage, stop a John Mack or somebody, you know, getting up an hour earlier than you, seeing and hearing what's to be seen. And the other thing is, John Mack used to say to me, he would make sure he's awake for every, during a session, like a 3-night session, he'd make sure he's awake listening for every single part of the 24-hour clock. So one night he'd set his alarm for midnight, make sure he sits up from midnight till 2 a.m. The following night he'll set his alarm for 2 a.m. and make sure he's up 2 till 4. The next night he'll do it later, and he'll make sure that he's awake during the session, because there are patterns. At certain times of year they're showing just after midnight, certain times of year they're showing an hour before first light, sometimes it's 2 hours after first light. I love it when it's like that. You get up at 5:30 a.m. in the spring and you don't see your first fish until 8:30. You know, you get a little pattern of that. You can stop getting up at 5:30, you know, because the fish is showing at 8 o'clock. I've seen it 10 a.m. in the morning is the first fish, and then you start seeing, you know, not just you but the whole lake, because you're on a syndicate, you're keeping in touch with the rest of the people, and there are patterns. You know, one of the first questions, this is all part of watercraft, is somebody else says, yeah, I've seen a few fish in front of me as it goes. My next question is, when? What time? Was it first light? Was it just before? Was it just after? Was it 10 a.m? And because there's patterns, the fish are doing what they're doing for reasons. And then there's a whole other lot of stuff to look for. I think water temperatures is very important. So knowing the deep, shallow areas, you know, an area of the lake where the sun is on all day. If you get an area of the lake where the sun hits it all day long and it's fairly shallow, you can guarantee the fish are there a lot of the time. Natural larders under the surface. You spoke about the green eels weed. You know, we know there's certain types of siltweed that we call feedy weed. You know, when you pull the siltweed in, it's just laced in little snails and bloodworm and critters. You know, we call that feedy weed. Fishing near that, just natural areas that are likely to hold fish, and territorial areas as well. Another part of watercraft is understanding what fish like what areas. Big fish especially are territorial. They like coming out of certain parts of the lake. They'll have an area where they sunbathe, they'll have an area where they go and sulk, and they'll have an area where they like feeding. So do a bit of research on that as well. I think this is probably a good time to get one of our experts in. Yep, so if you were going to give our listeners some tips on watercraft, do you think watercraft can be taught?
Yeah, definitely. But it's definitely something that you've got to be able and willing to do. You know, it's not one of these things what's in the shop that you can just go and buy. You know, it's one of these things that you've got to teach yourself. You know, you're only going to get better at it the more and more you do it.
I think
that all comes from that drive and that sort of passion, if you like. You know, people, if you actually wanting to go further in your fishing, you know, actually getting up and going, you know, it's part of it, you know. And then once you're there, you know, finding them, and you know, some people are so easy to just drop into a swim, just because it's free and available, or one of his mates tells him that he's done a fish that, like, over the weekend or somehow, just because the bailiff says that this one's the bin, you know, they'll just drop straight in them, put a bucket in there, they've not even had a look around.
How would you describe watercraft? What are the key points of watercraft? I mean, it sounds obvious, obviously, just seeing the fish or understand what's going on under the water, but what does watercraft mean to you?
Well, what it means to me is location. Rule number one, underneath fish care, obviously, which is a given, is location. You've got to locate the fish, and obviously, when you say key points, there's definitely a few key points that you can do to locate the fish, things that you can do to locate the fish. Obviously, the obvious one that a lot of people know is the seeing fish showing, you know, the showing.
Yeah.
And generally, so therefore, fish showing, it generally happens either first thing in the morning, feeding time, or throughout the night. And what I always say is, like, wherever the fish are going to spend their time throughout the night and in the morning, at that feeding time, is the place to be. And I always say that I know that the fish will always, always return to that same spot where they were throughout the night and in the morning, unless one of two things happens. Now, them two things are a change in weather conditions, drastic change in weather, or a change in pressure, that being angling pressure. So, in my mind, what I do is I always try and locate the fish. There's a lot of things that you can do to locate them, using your eyes. Some people seem to forget about your eyes these days, you know. it seems to be a forgotten art. But yeah, so whether it be fish showing, you know, fizzing, you know, I always carry binoculars and a pair of shades, so I'm climbing up trees, looking for fish in the edge. Even down to when you're doing your lap, if you see fish in the edge at one end of the lake, maybe one or two fish in the edge or something like that, just because you might not even have a go at fishing for them fish, but it's told you that there's fish down that end. And if you continue your lap further and there's none up the other end, maybe on the back of the wind or something like that. That's sort of giving you a location of you sort of. So you don't have to just see fish to know where they are, not seeing them. Use that as information to tell you where they're not, if you understand what I mean.
Also
the birds, mate. I use the birds a hell of a lot. I'm not saying that the birds are ringing me up or dropping me text messages.
Not them sort, anyway.
I'm always using the birds. They're always giving stuff away. Now, obviously, the common ones that people are probably going to know are, say, for instance, you've got your rods out, or the birds dive on your bait, or some sort of bait, it could be old bait, and they come up and shoot off, you know, like coots. Coots are your best ones. They're the, scaredy cats of the playground. They'll come up off bait and shoot off. That's a guaranteed sign of fish feeding on bait, you know. And this isn't stuff that I'm just guessing. This is stuff where I've been up trees, seen coots dive on top of carp feeding, and they come up and do that exact thing. So I can put it into my own angling that that's definitely fish feeding on me. But on top of that, don't just use that as a guarantee. I've also seen coots diving into fish from trees, and they haven't been disturbed. It's been the fish that have spooked off. Or sometimes I've seen them just feeding casually. They're using each other. This is nature, you know. Like, they're using each other to sort of tell you where food is. It's nature. All they're after is food. It's like in, say, for instance, in the desert. You know, if something dies in the desert, all of a sudden a load of things on the ground end up around it, and then the birds come hovering around, and they find that they're using the other animals to locate food. All they want to do is survive. Bless you.
Thank you.
I'm always using the birds. So there's one. It's like, say for instance, when you're in a park lake and you throw some bread off the bridge, and all of a sudden the birds come over, and what comes behind them? The carp. You know, they end up just following them in, because they're using the birds to locate the food, the free food. And also from the trees, I've seen fish feeding and birds come over the top of them, just casually going across the top of them. And then, the coots see the birds, the coots see the carp feeding, sorry, and they dive down. So I'm always keeping my eye on the birds. And say, other things is Sorry, I've got my old man writing down notes next to me. got a free tuition. always using the birds, mate. That's definitely one big thing that I use. Obviously, the fish showing is the best way to locate the fish. Use your eyes, find the fish. If you can't find the fish, there's other things that you can do to locate them. The birds is definitely a massive one. Even in the night, you know, when you'd know it yourself, and when you hear a fish watch out, boosh, like that, and it scares a coot, you know, and it's like, wah, you know, lets out that squawk, you know, that. And the thing is unless you actually listening for that sound, you won't take it in. I almost make that sound unnatural in my own environment now. It's like, say, for instance, you were fishing, and all of a sudden the car alarm started going off, you'd hear it.
Yeah.
But if you're not listening out for these bird signs, you won't take them in because they're just in the natural environment. So every time one of them squawks goes off, it could be in the day or in the night, something that spooked it, I hear it. It sticks out, stands out in my mind. And many a times and the thing is in night especially this works well, but you'll hear, say for instance you're on a big windswept pit, 100 acres it could be, whatever, you're going to hear this high pitch squawk over a really dull sort of sounding fish bosh. Say for instance if it's in a far corner away from you, you're not going to hear a fish boshing out at 300 yards away. But if a fish washes and it scares a coot, you're going to hear that bird noise.
Yeah.
And that's where many a time I've heard that go off. I've got myself around there when I'm doing my little night laps or whatever. I've got myself around there to where I thought he heard the coot. And, yeah, bang, another one's gone over and the same coot's gone, you know.
So yeah.
I know that's a very sort of in-depth, in-detail thing, but it's just one sort of example.
I know exactly what you mean. I've already mentioned it on when I was chatting with Mark about it. It's a very distinctive, spooky type noise that they make, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
you just described.
Yeah, that's exactly.
And sometimes you don't hear the fish, but you never mistake that coot noise, and you know that it's been spooked by a fish lumping next to it. Because in the night, it always scares them. Yeah, it's very important that. So many people sit with the phone on or the TV on or Netflix and they're just not listening at night, you know, so it's so important after dark.
Whenever the fish are awake, I'm awake, so sometimes I'll turn nocturnal. It works well when I'm coming off nights, you know, I haven't got to adjust my sleep pattern or anything. I'll be turning up in the dark, walking around in the dark, locating the fish throughout the night, showing, because they do a hell of a lot more showing in the night than they do in the day. They know they've got that cover, that safety. They're not stupid, so I'll be walking around in the night locating the fish, and then as soon as I've located the fish, I'm happy. I can just pitch up whether I sleep in my van or whatever. I'll let the fish drift up when the sun comes out in the day. The fish are going to move out of that area, get in the edge or on the top or what have you, and go and do that whatever for the day, but they will come back to that position. Sometimes, you know, it doesn't go right, you know, when you sit there, you get your rods out the next evening, you know, when everything's drifted off, definitely, you get them out perfect, and then they just don't come back. But it's generally down to a change in weather conditions, the weather's changed and you just missed it, or there's a load of pressure to come on, or you get it wrong when you put pressure in that area in the wrong way, lines in the swim, or leaded up too much, something like that, and the fish have caught it and they won't come back. But I always say, if there's no change in conditions and you can get your rods out perfectly without them being aware of it, they're going to come back to that safety of where they were the night before. Why wouldn't they, you know?
Yeah. Fantastic.
But while I was on the birds, I might as well drop a couple others. The coots are definitely the best ones. Seagulls are good to locate in hatches. I use them for locating hatches. You see them all fluttering around. Sometimes they all just land and just pecking down at the water. And also breeds as well are really good for finding clear areas, you know, because they won't work through the weed chasing little fish. They'll always work, and I've seen it from the trees where they won't go through the weed. They'll just be in a clear, say, bowl in the weed or something. They're working through a channel or what have you. So I use them a lot. You know, if I get into a swim and there's fish showing in a certain area or in that swim, I can use the greaves where they're sort of working up and down through the channels in the weed. I think, right, well, there's a channel in the weed at 60 yards, so I can definitely extend the rig there. Just sort of narrowing down my spot finding, how much time I've got to take.
That's a good shout, yeah. I didn't really cover that one. I'm writing it down.
Yeah. I'd definitely say the best way to learn about birds is watch them all the time, because by watching their natural behaviour, anything unnatural really stands out. I'll be sat there, I'll watch them for hours and hours sometimes, you know, just watching these little coots so I can play a little game in my head, like they're chatting to each other and that. Because I'm watching them, I get to know their natural behaviour, and all of a sudden one will just be making its way across the water on its own, and all of a sudden it'll switch off and look down and move off, and it's unnatural. And it's giving me a sign that there's a fish underneath it, or it's seen something. It wouldn't do it for no reason, you know. You've always got to keep an eye on what's going on around it as well. Is there another one trying to get on his missus in his nest or whatever, you know? Sometimes that is a, you know what I mean, a false call, you know. You've got to watch what's going on. Sometimes we get a bit aggy with each other, don't we?
Yeah, you see with the swans as well.
Same with the swans. Same, I was just going to say the same, mate.
Yeah, you see them swimming along and they're looking in the water and they just change route slightly, or you can just see they're not scared, but they just, you can see they clock something underneath them.
Sometimes they'll peck down into the water as well, swans. Quite aggressive, but a bit more hardcore, aren't they? They're the bad boys. They'll peck down into the water. I see a swan, could be at 400 yards through my binos, as it pecks down into the water, especially in the spring when they've got young. This is, all the bird signs are so much better in late spring when they've got them young. They're so much more protective over the young. If I see a swan pet down into the water, it's only one thing. I mean, yeah, it could be a pike or tench or whatever, but it's activity. Generally, it is carp.
And then,
I'd say location watercraft, mate. Go on, sorry.
And essential items, you mentioned your binoculars there. I assume you never leave home without your Polaroids.
Polaroids, but there's one thing with Polaroids, mate, you know, it's got to be amber lenses for me. Fortis do the ones that I use, whichever frame you want, you know, it doesn't matter what frame you are, whichever one suits you, but the amber lens, and what that is the really bright yellow.
Yeah.
And the thing is I've shown them people before and they've put them on, like, wow, they're bright, you know, especially in the sun. But at the end of the day, when it's sunny and flat calm, you don't need shades, you can see the fish without them. The thing is, when shades come in really handy is when it's dull, overcast, bit of a chop on the water, you're on the end of the wind looking up a tree, and you know, you can't really see. If you've got some dull brown lenses on, you're not going to see into that water column. If you've got these amber lenses, I say make a dull day bright, that's what I say, and you'll see through the water column, and you're not going to see the whole fish, but you might just see a dark shaped shadow just cruise under that snag, or just under the surface, hiding under that ripple. If you had them dull lenses on, you wouldn't see. So them amber lenses from Portis, they're really good, mate.
Yeah, it's amazing how all the good anglers I know, they all have come to exactly the same conclusion about everything. It's the same, me, Roger, we've only ever used amber lenses. Amber lenses are basically for low light. If you're feeling flush, you can have a set of dark lenses for bright days so that you look cool and that, but the yellow lenses are the ones.
Definitely. But like, I would say, like, not all the good anglers are looking like me, Jamie.
This must be your dad's jeans, it can't be you.
Hey, you're out of magic.
Alright, dude, thank you very much. We can't give everything away.
I've got to roll some back, mate.
Or maybe start off with how would you describe watercraft, and do you think you can teach it to somebody?
Can it be taught? Watercraft can be taught, but it's best experience, you know, learning from what you've done and what's worked for you and the scenario and the circumstances that surrounded it.
So if you took somebody under your wing, you told them fishing, I mean, yes, your eyes are probably the most important thing, but some people just see more than others, you know, like, and then use that information to work out the things that the top 10% do and everybody else misses. So maybe you notice they're on the back of the island in the mornings and they're on the front of the island in the days, or the patrol routes change depending on the weather. I mean, how would you like start off telling somebody where to begin? Because it's one of them things, the further you get stuck into it, the more, like, you probably take it for granted the things that you're seeing and then working out, but if you were trying to tell somebody else the important things to take note of, what would you be telling them?
Well, it's just looking for the patterns, you know. Obviously, we're all looking for fish. We're all, like, keep our eyes open. But it's when you start to see things and they reoccur, and then you try and understand why. Why are they doing that in this situation, in these conditions? And as soon as you start to understand why and when they do certain things, then you can start to predict them. And that's watercraft, isn't it? Watercraft is when you're starting to understand what the fish in your lake are doing, and possibly being one step ahead and knowing what they're going to do next.
And do you use other things to help you? Do you use the birds? You're watching for reactions, obviously listening when they're spooking because something's lumped out next to them in the middle of the night, or you're just tuned into everything that's going on at all times?
Just trying to take any information, regardless of where it comes from, whether it's a coot that pops up and is absolutely petrified because it's seen something, or a fish has crashed out, or somebody's had a bite on the other side, or you've seen somebody get a genuine liner, or anything, you know, any piece of information that you can add to what you already know is building the picture, isn't it? And the more you have, more pieces of the puzzle that you have, the fuller understanding of what's going on.
I remember you saying to me one time on your Conningbrook days, you know, just as you thought you were working something out, you opened your eyes in the morning and there was John Mack already doing whatever it was you'd just sussed out.
At Conningbrook they used to follow the wind, that was what they did, and I would wait for the wind to change, where John Mack would go there before it started, you know, he'd know that it was going to change in an hour's time, and he would be there, he'd be winning his barrier into the swim as the first ripple started to turn, you know, and yeah, I was quite often one step behind him, it felt.
And that's come from working out on that lake, that they're very quick to move on a new wind. You've used that info and simple as just keeping an eye on the weather, knowing that the fish are moving. Are there any, like, if you're on a new lake and you haven't got that sort of info yet, I mean, you're trying to fast track, aren't you, to try and work out what the fish are doing as quickly as you can. Are there things you automatically do? Obviously a new wind is a fairly obvious one that most people know, but is there anything that's, you know, do you find them on wind lines, or on look at the back of the winds at certain times of year, or like what's your sort of general outlook if you haven't got all that info because you've been on there for 6 months or something?
General opening gambit is to turn up, and if you haven't seen anything, fish in the middle of the lake with single pop-ups just ready to move, that my opening gambit is always to fish to what I see, and if I can't see anything, than pick a room with a view somewhere where I can see a lot of water, quite often on the back of the wind, because you're more likely to look well on the back of the wind than on the end of it. You're more comfortable. And yeah, my opening gambit is always fish to what you see, and as you start to see fish and you fish to them and you get a gauge of their reaction, then you can start to think, oh right, they start getting in these conditions, they're quite often out here and they're quite often out there on these conditions, blah blah blah, blah. And yeah, just It's a opening gambit is always guessing, you know, if you haven't seen anything, you know nothing, but if you go in the middle, you can never be more than halfway wrong. Yeah. And that's quite often, you know, that's how I look at it. If you're at one end, you can be completely wrong. If you're at the other end, again, you can be completely wrong. But if you're in the middle and you haven't seen anything, you can keep a good view. And yeah, that's always how I start. Start light, never use much bait, and build a bit of understanding of the fish habits. And if I've got half an inkling that they're going to come back, then yeah, I will start using bait and stuff like that. But initially, when you know nothing, it's best just to be light, minimal, and keep your angling pressure to a minimum.
And what about the bum steers? Do you ever there's some people that you'll always take the info from them, and there's been situations where you might be just keeping something under your hat a little bit, you're spotting something that you don't think anyone else is onto yet, a little bit of the skullduggery or secrecy?
Yeah, obviously anything that you can use to your advantage, you know, if you think it will pay dividends to keep stum and not stay, and it will benefit you, then yeah, always, you know. But sometimes, at other times, it's worth older information. Quite often, is worth sharing for possibly picking up something that's more current, more recent, you know.
I remember my first session on the St. Ives Lagoon, and I didn't know anything about the lake. You were already on there, and I set up on the wind near the car park behind the Travelator. I forget what it was called in that corner, but I did the first night. It was freezing bloody cold, like on there, you know, and it was like June time, I think. So it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't meant to be cold, but it was. And I remember you walking around saying, should we ever walk around the lake, do a lap? And we walked into the, I think it was the, what was that shallow area? It was really weedy. The Lawns, was it? And it was like a different lake. It was on the back of the wind. Straight away, we were like, this is 10 degrees warmer. And that's where the fish were. But it was that walk around the lake that kind of told us that, you know, even though I thought I was doing the right thing on the end of the wind. And until you get round that lake, you realise that why would the fish be over there when they can be sat here in comfort? I mean, do you do that as a matter of course? You'll try and get around the lake every day?
Yeah, I try and get around the lake in the winter. Sometimes it's not always the one, you know. Sometimes they are just where they are, and that's it. Sometimes, yeah. Every day you should try and get around the lake. Ideally, you know, and you never know what you might see. You know, your swim is so limited compared to the entirety of the lake, and yeah, it never hurts to have a little stroll about.
Fantastic! Thank you very much. As one of the most observant and clued up watercraft experts I've ever met, so you and Johnny Mack are the two that always seem to know what's going on, so I wanted a quick word with you for this episode. Thank you very much.
No problem, mate.
How are we doing, Pat?
I'm alright, how are you?
Not too bad. I was ringing you to get a little chat about watercraft, as I always think of you when I talk about watercraft. And then I tried ringing you, didn't answer, and then I just seen somebody else post up saying that if you're ever having a dilemma or feeling a bit down in the dumps, just give John Mack a call, because I'm chuckling to myself now. He's one funny fucker. And I thought, that's why he's not. I thought, that's why he's not answering the phone. So, yeah, you can cheer me up as well. It's miserable. I've just had flu and it's cold up north.
It's fucking grim up north, man. Listen, I've had that fucking horrible thing at all.
Oh, it's grim. If you've had the proper flu, yeah, it's not fun.
Nah. I didn't have the proper flu, but it was pretty fucking savage what I had.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
It's your favourite time of the year, you're fishing?
Yeah, man.
Of course you are.
Yeah, man.
Where are you at?
Yeah, I'm down Farlow's. I've been down the quarry in Essex.
Mm.
For a couple of nights, and now I've come to Farlow. I've done a night last night in a bit of a shit swim, but waiting for a couple of geezers to fuck off, and now they fucked off and I'm in a better swim.
Excellent. That's been doing a few fish over the winter, hasn't it, Farlow's?
Fucking loads.
Has it? Loads.
Yeah, it's fucking different gravy. I ain't been here for 23 years, and when I was last here, we used to come down here and I used to get in these swims all the time. And now it seems like these are the going areas. So, well, I, you know, it's funny that the swims that I used to always go for are now the going swims in the winter.
Yeah. Yeah, it's long time since I've been there. It was all one lake last time I went, which I don't know when it was separated. Is it two or three lakes now?
I think it's two fishing lakes, and then they've got a little bit that used to be the Pads Bay, and that bit I think is I don't know. There's another bit that's been chopped off, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Fucking changed down here.
Used to be good in the winter. I think I had 100 carp one winter, probably. I wouldn't like to guess how long ago. 1997, 1998, maybe.
Yeah, man. Last time I was here was 95.
Wow. Yeah, a long time ago. Yeah. Maybe our paths crossed back then. I don't know. I used to go down there. The geezer called John the Plumber and his mate Nick. But they got attacked one night on their load. They ended up having a shower with a couple of guys who come back and petrolled their bivvies. Smelly Bank, is it? Yeah, I never really went back after that. It put me off. I used to fish on my own, and put me off a little bit.
Yeah, it was always a little bit. You always had to watch it because there could be people pulling in and dodgy motors and people stuff. Yeah,
Yeah, it's obviously it's changed now. I stuck to Rodney Meadow, which was all pretty safe behind locked gates back there, that complex, and that's where I met them two guys. But yeah, shout out to them if they ever end up listening to this. I don't even know if they're still fishing, but they were pretty keen then. John the Plumber used to do an overnighter every night after work, 5 nights a week. Like,
I don't know who they are, but used to have a good time down here. I'll tell you what, he used to have like a bloody, I can't remember what it was made of, some crappy old hut down there. There's a bar and a pool table, and then there was Bayless Point that no one could ever fish, and it's all now open, and obviously you've got Eric's Angling Centre there, and it's absolutely phenomenal, the shop, the cast crate, English breakfast is unreal, I had one this morning, and yeah, it's a great place to come.
I had a few sessions in that bar. It was back there. I think that's where most of the rows used to come from. I think that might have even been what happened. They had a few bevvies in there and then ended up falling out with someone.
Do you know what? I never went in that bar. I was literally just come down and I would always fish on the smelly bank on the opposite side from the bar, because no one ever fished down here. It was really quite quiet, but yeah, it's rammed down here now.
I bet. Anyway, it does fish in winter and it's got facilities, then yeah, for sure. So, getting on to watercraft, do you reckon you can teach somebody watercraft, or what does the actual word watercraft mean to you?
Basically, watercraft. I think you can learn it, but it takes a while. Obviously, you know what it's like with the influx of, you know, newcomers in the sport or whatever, you know, and into fishing these days. I mean, like you say, all the information's there about, you know, what to be looking out for and all the rest of it. But yeah, I suppose to some degree, it comes naturally, doesn't it? You know.
Yeah, the information's in front of you, but some people see it more than others, and some people know how to use that information better, I think.
Yeah, well, I love the way that you describe things. I always said this about you. You're very good with words, more so than I am. But yeah, it's like, and people feel it more than other people, don't they? You know, it's like, you can feel, it's a sixth sense. Watercraft, yeah. In my view, is a little bit like a sixth sense. Yeah. I can't say the word because it's sixth. There you go. I want to end everything with an S. But yeah, so sixth sense, watercraft comes down to a bit of that, I think.
And
not everyone's got that.
Do you find that some people are just better watchers than others? They just see more that's going out, you know, going on out there, whether it be bubbling, whether it be subtle fish shows.
I mean, some people are good at that, but I've said this loads of times, but my mates from Wimia, or like, certain people do things in different ways, yeah? Certain people like to sit up late, but they like to go to bed, and they like to get up early. So, most people love to get up early, and there's certain times of the year that's good. In the spring, April, May, let me think, April, yeah. Right, on Berthold, you need to be up really early, about 4 o'clock, half four, you'll see them. But at this time of year, as you well know, I like to stay awake, and people go on about, I know that we're past at the end of December now, and therefore the nights are sort of starting to get a little bit longer, but even in the depths of winter when the nights are at their shortest, it wasn't that long ago, it was only a few weeks ago, it was like that. I like to sit up till 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, and I only sleep probably for 3 or 4 hours, and I don't even need to, I think I'd probably get overtired, but that's what I like. I like to stay up late because always something going on at night. I heard one last night, actually. I mean, I know this is a different water now and it's got a lot of fish in it, but I heard one last night, it just goes to show that the guys that were in here, they said, no, I haven't seen anything, and heard nothing into this thing. But then I heard one late at night. So, yeah. different people do different things in different ways, don't they?
Yeah, that's, I always remember you staying up all night in the winter or setting an alarm. I used to go to bed early. I'd just be bored at, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock when it goes dark. And then I'd sleep, and you could have 7 hours sleep and be wide awake at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And it's amazing because you know you're the only person up. If you do hear that telltale sign or a coot squawking where something spooked it, washed out next to it or whatever, that bit of information in the winter can change everything, because they're usually grouped up. And if you get a bit of information as to where they are, especially you know no one else has heard it, because most people are asleep at 3 o'clock in the morning in the middle of winter. I used to get excited, sat out, get the Coleman on, make a brew, something to eat maybe, but it's just nice time of night, isn't it?
My Coleman's on 24/7.
Yeah.
So when I come fishing, I bring a 5 litre bottle of petrol. What's it, about £1.20. Yeah, 6 quid's worth of fuel you can get in there, roughly, a bit more. And that lasts about 3 or 4 days of permanent, well, I'd say four nights of permanent abuse on the Coleman, sitting there, pillbox style in the bivvy, and the Coleman's on, I'm just sitting there, I'm toasty, mate. I'm just sitting there, toasty, and intensely tapping away at the phone, chatting to mates on Facebook or what have you. I quite often have friends ring me up at 3 in the morning when they've been out on a party night, and they'll be like, let's ring John, he's bound to be awake. I know, I play the game now, and it's like, they ring me at 3:30 in the morning, and I'm like, hello. Just wide awake.
If you're starting a new lake, then you've got no info, do you have a sort of a routine that you go through to try and learn the lake?
Right, well, obviously, speaking to people, having manners, presenting yourself in the right way goes a long way in getting a bit of a head start, doesn't it? Yeah. Because, you know, it's nice to be nice, isn't it? And there's a lot of rude people about. I'm not one of them, you know. I'll speak to anyone. And I like to make friends with new fishing I don't know what the word will be, comrades or whatever.
Compadres, yeah.
Whatever. But yeah, so basically, yeah, a little bit of inside information. But other than that, I just, when I'm on a new water, I'm so keen. So keen. Especially if there's like massive prize in there. And it really, you know, stimulates your mind, sort of thing. And that's when I just will not sleep. And that's just, I just love that feeling of being on a new lake.
So you just,
not sleeping. Yeah,
just trying to be awake and looking for every little sign.
And another thing, like you say, you can sort of try and do it in shifts. For a few nights, you might want to sort of stay awake all day, all evening. And you might want to get up really early, you know, like crack of dawn, for a few days. For, you know, and see if you see anything, and then if that's not really sort of working, you can't just sort of think, well, I need to keep getting up in the morning, you need to change that, and you need to sort of like go, right, well, I'm going to stay up all night till 6 in the morning, and I'm going to go asleep in the day, and then I'm going to be awake the next night till 6 in the morning. You need to do that for 3 or 4 days, staying awake till 6 in the morning for 3 or 4 days. If you haven't seen them in the morning onwards, you know, that's just sort of do that little sort of shift in time, in your pattern sort of thing of your sleep.
Yeah.
You're bound to work something out.
If you can't get the info off other people, because that's one of the first things I ask, if somebody wants to tell me a bit of info, like knowing when that happened, you know, sometimes they're showing just before it gets light, sometimes it's just after, sometimes you see nothing at first light till 10 o'clock in the morning, they start popping the reds out.
Yeah.
So, you know, you want to try and see all of a 24-hour period, like, as quickly as you can. As you said, do it in stints.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
sure, definitely.
Yeah.
Like you say, well, because obviously from month to month that will probably change, you know. Certainly within like the seasons of the year it changes, so yeah, like you say, you want to try and get that in within as quick a time as possible, really. Like your sleep pattern, work out when they're showing, you know.
Yeah, very much so. Well, as one of the sharpest people, you always seem to know what's going on every lake. It's what I find is, you know, people like you, Daryl was always really good, Roger's really good, like it's second nature to him, like they don't even know what they're doing, but they're just taking it all in, and you know, it becomes very clear how the fish are moving down that side of the island in the mornings, and you know, I don't know, you just always seem to know what's going down on any given lake. It's but it's
like I said, it's like a sixth sense.
Yeah.
I can't even say the bloody words.
Fantastic, thank you very much. It's always the people that think it's, you know, they explain it very simple because it just seemed like obvious, doesn't it, to some people, and other people
I'll tell you something funny. The guy that you just mentioned earlier on said, someone on Facebook said, if you're ever down in the dumps, give Johnny Mack a ring. He's funny or something like that. I don't know what he said.
Yeah.
He was actually just talking to me just now. He's going, oh, you need to write a book because there's so many stories. I mean, obviously, I said to him, listen, I haven't got time for that. I can't be bothered with it. But I don't think there's words that you could possibly use to describe my life. And I don't think I could ever write a book on fishing. If I ever was to write a book, it would be an autobiography. It would be John McAllister, autobiography of a carp angler. And it would include carp fishing, but you could make such a good read of, some of the stuff that you know, myself and you and all our friends, like, you know, have been up to in the years gone by.
Hey, I've got the title, and it's been called Day in the Life of a Geezer. There you go.
Oh, my, that's so funny. that goes back to our social last year when we had that tune plan in
the streets. The
rum and cokes and getting a bit tipsy. Oh, we had such a laugh.
We did, mate. We did. Are you out at your lake at any point in the near future?
Well, hopefully not, because normally if I have to go, that means there's issues that I have to deal with, like, I don't know, we haven't drained the system down properly and there's put like leaked pipes over the winter where things are frozen over. But yeah, hopefully not. But you know, again, this year we'll be adding to the stock. So we've got some fish on order. They'll be coming probably pretty soon, another sort of 70-20, mid-20s. So yeah, you know.
Fantastic.
Onwards and upwards. Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Giving us a little insight to Johnny Mack's watercraft. And then we'll speak soon, Geez.
You're absolutely welcome, mate. No problem.
So big thank you to a few people there that know a bit more than us. Obviously, people that we've already mentioned as being some of the best in the business. So hopefully you've learned something there, apart from me and Mark. If you have to summarise, Mark, it covers such a big area, watercraft, I think. But I think all the pieces come together to give you that picture of what's going on the lake. And for me, that's what watercraft's about. So you give a bit of a summary?
Yeah. The summary is just learn, study the fish, study the lake, keep your eyes open, and always keep an open mind as well. You know, just see what is going on. You know, like I said, walking around the lake, you know, at least once a day, you know, in the night as well, anytime, just constant observation, but not just watching. Analyzing what you see, you know the coots are diving on a spot. Are they diving or are they coming up with bait? Is someone's bait down there, and are they diving happily, or is one going to hit the surface already flying because something down there spooked them? That's a dead giveaway of something big down there, usually a big carp. You know, if you see shallow water, if you watch swans go through shallow water when they come across carp,
yeah,
they just stop dead in their tracks and they're staring straight down in front of them, often backing up slightly. Again, it's another giveaway if the fish aren't showing, especially in weedy waters they do that. It's just the study of the lake and learning how to react to it.
yes, keep your eyes and your ears open at all times. Make that effort to get up in the mornings. Make sure, you know, you're not cooking your evening meal when it's going dark and you're distracted from looking at the lake. You know, key times you want to be watching the lake, or certainly your area and your swim. I mean, if you can't watch all of the lake, then just make sure you watch your area so you know if you need to move. I mean, if your area is looking dead, then there's probably something going on somewhere else. So, you know, the first priority is to check out your own water, you know, at the key parts of the day. Do a lap around the lake at least once a day. Talk to people, although, you know, take what they say with a pinch of salt sometimes if you think they may have reason to bum steer you. And what you're looking for always is that, yeah, they've been showing all morning, one after the other. Nobody ever lies about that. There's just no point. They're giving you the information. Eyes and ears. Learn the lake, learn the topography of the lake. If you have to use some technology to do that, echo sounders, deepers, Google Maps is a good one. Use the air if you're joining a new lake. Get on Google Earth or Google Maps. Look at the satellite picture, the actual real picture. And then there's a little ruler at the top of like Google Earth and stuff where you can scroll back through previous years, sometimes to like 1940s and 50s. You can scroll right back to the earliest aerial pictures and you might find one year where there was no weed in the lake or the water was gin clear, and you can see absolutely everything, every little feature, every little bar. So it's definitely worth checking the little ruler symbol on Google Earth and just scrolling back many years. They used to take them every 5 years, I believe. I think they're a bit more frequent these days. But yeah, just scroll back through previous years, because one year the water might have been gin clear and you can just see everything, which is another little tip. Learn the lake, map the lake, and then be as observant as you can. And when you watch the water, even if you can only do it in 20 minute stints, make sure you don't take your eyes off the water. You're scanning. It's very easy to get distracted, to, you know, think about something else, and I'll just grab that, or grab that out of the back of the bivvy, or your phone beeps or whatever. You're not watching the water when that's happening, and that could be the difference. Maybe you just want to relax and catch some fish and you're not bothered how many, but sometimes you really want to tune in. And if you want to tune in, you know, there's a reason why some people catch a lot more than others consistently. And some of the people we've had on this episode, and some of the people, because I don't count myself in this super observant category. I'm fortunate that I'm better than I should be just by having some really good people around me that kind of force me. I know that if I'm fishing on a lake and Roger is on the lake, or Daryl or John Mack, I know my phone's going at 5 a.m. because they're already up and probably been up for an hour. And it's almost, they guilt trip me into getting up in the mornings, because, you know, they're not going to give you information if you're not giving it back. You know, there's no point if they're on the other side of the lake telling you what's going on over there and you can't give them an answer for your side. They're going to soon stop giving you that info. So, yes, watercraft. Done. Carpcast Extra. Turn on.